This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church. A soldier will be involved in many different battlefield scenarios. One minute he may be marching in formation, the next he'll be locked in hand-to-hand combat with the enemy. Good shoes are crucial to his success. They'll strengthen his stance and preserve his endurance. Today, we'll begin a sermon titled, Wearing the Shoes of the Gospel of Peace, from Ephesians chapter 6 and other passages. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
I'm going to ask you to take your Bible this morning to the book of Ephesians, where we have been now for almost 3 months looking at different portions, and we are coming down to the very end of the book, and we are in that marvelous section of the book where the Apostle Paul has been heading. We noted that in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 10, he began that whole section with the word finally, and we noted that that word was not a wrap-up word. That's not Paul saying, okay, you know, after 5.5 chapters, we're getting down to the end, hang in there, we're almost done. That's not what he's doing. He's actually highlighting this part of the book, and he's saying, this is where I have been heading the entire time. I want to talk to you about this amazing spiritual thing that you're part of. There is a cosmic conflict, and he's laid out what the conflict is about. He's talked about the two sides in the conflict, the forces of God, the armies of God, and these powerful, wicked spiritual forces that are identified in verses 10 through 13, and they are literally at war with each other. And you are in this conflict. You are a part of this battle. You are on the right side because of something that has happened to you way back in Ephesians chapter 2. God enlivened you. He opened your eyes. He brought you from death to light. He brought you out, or to life rather. He brought you out of darkness into light. And he gave you the knowledge to know the truth of the gospel, the word of truth that saved you. And two times in the book, the Apostle Paul has been praying for you and for the Ephesians and for all of his readers that God would help them to know the truth of what he is saying about them, because it's so unbelievable. And that then God would empower us and enable us so that we can live in light of that reality. And so as we come now to the end, we read about this amazing conflict that is going on a global scale. And God says to you, now there is a way for you to stand. There is a way for you to withstand the devil and anything that he throws your way. And it is by means of an armor that your champion, Jesus Christ, wore for you and now makes available to you. And so that's where we are. We've been looking at this armor. We looked at the belt of truth, and we looked at the breastplate of righteousness. And now the third piece of armor is in verse 15, where we are exhorted to take up the whole armor of God. And the piece of armor that we're to take up for our shoes is a readiness that is given by the gospel of peace. Now, what I want to do this morning is very simple. I want to tell you a story. I want to give you the background to this particular piece of armor. And then I want to show you three things about the armor, and then I want to make an application. All right? So we're going to hear a story. We're going to look at the background that leads up to this piece of armor. I want to show you three things about the armor, or about this particular piece of armor, and then I want to make an application. So that's the roadmap for us this morning. And if you're taking notes, let me just encourage you to jot some of these things down, because they're not things we normally think about when we think about the armor of God in general and this piece in particular. Some years ago, here's the story. Some years ago, I read an old book that detailed the life story of a very famous explorer. And you know the explorer. the minute I tell you his name. This explorer departed from Venice in 1571 as a 17-year-old boy. He traveled with his father and his uncle, and they made their way for the next 24 years throughout what we now know as the Far East. They traveled through Persia and China and Tibet and Burma and India. In fact, many people believe that these three men, these two men and this young boy, actually made their way as far as Japan. He left in 1571, and he returned in 1594 as a 41-year-old man, and his name was Marco Polo. You have heard of him, and I'm sure that you know many stories and know many of the legends, most of which have been debunked, but you know the story of this man. There is a particular legend that goes well with the part of the armor that we're talking about today. Marco Polo's journey was not the first time that his father and uncle had traveled to the Far East. In fact, they had come back and actually returned with young Marco Polo. Their first time through, they had been in the court of Genghis Khan. Now, you have heard about Genghis Khan, and you know about the immense amount of power that he had, the ruler over all the land stretching from the Mediterranean Sea to portions of the Pacific Ocean, and certainly a world-renowned ruler. Well, after his death, his empire eventually came under the control of one of his grandsons named Kublai Khan. Khan was the title that you gave the ruler, and Genghis was the first name, and then his grandson, son Kublai, ended up ruling over his empire. And that's when Marco Polo's dad and uncle brought young Marco Polo, and they ended up in the court of Kublai Khan. Now, there's a very interesting thing in history about Kublai Khan. Many people believe that his mother had embraced sort of a heretical message about Christianity. She had heard about a kind of Christianity. She had sort of been attracted to it. So Kublai Khan had at least some understanding of the Christian message. And when Marco Polo and his dad and his uncle came into the court of Kublai Khan, they talked about many things. He wanted to know all kinds of things about where they had come from and the West. But chief of the things he wanted to know was their religion. He wanted to know why they believed what they believed. And during one of their many discussions about the Christian religion, these three men asked Kublai Khan a question. They wanted to know his reason for not becoming a Christian, given how interested he was in that religion. I mean, it was something they talked about a lot. And so at the end of their conversations with him, they wanted to know, so why is it that you don't want to embrace this religion that you have been so curious about? And here is an abridged form of his response. I want to read it to you. He said this, "In my court, there are many grand and noble men who do not believe in your God, but rather are followers of idols and have received great powers from these idols to work miracles, which they do regularly perform in my presence. If I were to become a convert to the faith of Christ and profess myself a Christian, these nobles and other persons not inclined to your religion will ask me what caused me to receive baptism and to embrace Christianity, and I shall not know what answer to make. Then they shall consider me to be in grievous error and shall without difficulty, through their powers, surely bring about my death. But go to your people and seek out 100 men learned in the laws of your God and return them to me, and return with them to me, that they may demonstrate to all the supremacy of your God and explain the reasons why, though more powerful than idols, his followers refrain from the kinds of miracles that come from the evil spirits. When I witnessed this, I shall ban them and their religions, and I and my court shall be converted to Christianity, and I will be baptized. The Polo brothers and Marco returned to Venice, but could only persuade two men to make the perilous journey, both Roman Catholic priests, who returned with them with a very mangled and deficient form of the gospel, and 500 years of spiritual darkness fell on that part of the world. Polo's later assessment as an unsaved Roman Catholic was this, that had better men returned to preach the gospel, perhaps the great Khan would have embraced Christianity, for it is certain that he had strong leanings toward it. A great opportunity was lost because men were not prepared to give a reason for the hope that is in Christ, primarily because the hope was not in them. You know, this story may or may not be true, but it illustrates this piece of armor that we're talking about, this third piece of armor that Christ has made available, by which we, enabled by his strength, are able to stand the ground that we have given. But more than that, we are able to advance into the very heart of the dark realm over which the God of this world rules and reigns, with the light of the glorious gospel of grace that we have received. So that's the story. Let me give you a little background to this piece of armor, and then we want to draw three observations. This is the third piece of armor by which a believer stands. It is key to resisting the devil and any attacks that come against us. In other words, when Paul talks about standing, he says, now there is a means by which you stand. There are things that have to be true about your life if you are going to actually be able to resist the devil and stand against him. And here's what has to be true about your life. You have to be wearing a certain belt. You have to be wearing a certain breastplate. And now you have to be wearing a certain readiness, a certain preparation that comes out of the good news, the gospel, whose content is peace. So this part of the armor, these three things, are actually essential if we are going to stand against the attacks of the devil. Now, you received these three pieces of armor when you became a follower of Jesus Christ. These were given to you because of your relationship to Jesus Christ, God's anointed, appointed champion. And whatever these shoes are, whatever Paul is going to tell us they are described as a preparation, a readiness. The shoe is not the gospel. The shoe that you put on your feet that is going to give you stability so that you don't give ground when Satan attacks, and so that you actually advance the gospel in the kingdom of darkness, is a readiness and eager preparation and eager anticipation, a joyful eagerness and readiness to do something with the gospel, the good news about peace. So when we think about the shoe, whatever it is a readiness, a preparation, a joyful eagerness to do something that comes out of the peace that is the good news, the gospel that Paul is talking about here. This peace is the central focus of the book of Ephesians. I mean, we have been tracing this peace, this shalom, throughout the entire book. If you go back to chapter 1 and you look at verse 2, the way Paul introduces it, he says, grace and peace, shalom, be to you. And just so we know that this isn't just sort of a narrow idea in verse 3, he talks about this shalom as being the reason that you have received every blessing from the Father that comes by means of the Spirit, and all of those blessings are right now yours in the realm that matters, in the spiritual realm. That is going on right next to the realm that you and I physically live in, the physical realm that you and I call the earthly realm, that Paul describes as a realm that is under the control of the evil one who is energizing everyone who lives in this realm who does not know the Lord and has not received that peace. In chapter 1, verses 9 and 10, Paul said, "Now this peace that I talked about in verse 2 is a peace that God is bringing about for the entire universe. Everything is going to be restored to how it should be through the work of Messiah, everything in heaven and everything on earth." He said, "Well, how in the world is that ever going to happen?" And the answer is in chapter 2, when Jesus Christ came and wore a belt. He wore a belt of truth. We saw that when we went back to chapter 11 and we saw the word truth. Chapter 11 of the book of Isaiah, the word truth there is the word faithfulness. Jesus Christ faithfully obeyed in his human body as a God-man, but certainly in his humanity, he obeyed every single regulation, every single expectation. Jesus Christ, for his entire life in his humanity, rendered perfect obedience to God. Never once in thought, deed, or intent did he disobey. He wore that belt. And that is the obedience that God has credited to you. That's the belt you wear. It's not your little obedience that is marked by weakness and failure and disobedience that you have to keep coming back and fixing. It's not that obedience. It's not even the obedience of your disciplined life. It's not the obedience that sometimes we're so thankful for and sometimes in our own pride and arrogance we're even proud of. It's not that obedience at all. The obedience that God gave to you is a very different obedience. It's the obedience that Jesus Christ won when he lived on earth as a man. That's the belt that he gave you. That's the one that Paul is talking about. And that obedience resulted in the perfect meeting of God's expectations. The word for that is righteousness. Jesus Christ, because of his perfect obedience, gained a perfect righteousness that he wore as a breastplate. And it's that righteousness that you wear as your breastplate. It's not your righteousness. It's not the things that you do. Titus talks about this. It is not by our own works of righteousness that we stand before God. Remember that passage we looked at in Zechariah chapter 3 when Joshua the high priest, with all his high priestly garments, is being accused by Satan, and God says to him through Christ, "Take those garments off and put a different robe on him." And that's exactly what happened to you. The obedience that Jesus rendered in his earthly life resulted in a perfect righteousness, and it is that righteousness that he gives to you. That's the breastplate that you wear. And that obedience and that righteousness created a peace. It made peace possible. And the way that peace happened to come to you, the unrighteous one, is in chapter 2, when Paul says, "Now this champion who wore the belt of truth and won the breastplate of righteousness did something stunning. He took your place. He became your substitute. And he died on the cross that you should have died on because of your guilt and your sins. And in so doing, he tore down the hostility, this wall that was impenetrable and unbreachable. He tore that wall down between you and God and between you and each other. And this shalom, this peace, is what he gives to you." Jesus looked at his disciples on the way to winning that peace, and he said to them, "My peace I give to you. My peace I leave with you." And he's really clear about this. This is not the kind of peace that you're going to find anywhere in the world. If you're looking for peace in the world, there are many solutions, there are many options, there are many ways in which you can attempt to find what we're talking about here. Maybe you're going to find it in security. Maybe you're going to find it in possessions and in the accumulation and protection of wealth. Maybe you're going to find it in some satisfaction that you have determined will make you happy. Maybe it's in your good health. Maybe it's in the car you drive. Maybe it's in your bank account. Maybe it's in the family that you think you have. And Jesus says, now, that kind of peace is not what I'm talking about. I have a very, very different kind of peace, and it comes from a very different source. I mean, in Paul's day and in Jesus' day, the world had a peace. It was called the Pax Romana, the Roman peace. And if you've ever studied history, that period of time is actually called the Pax Romana, the Roman peace, and it was enforced. It was won by a sword, and it was enforced by a sword. And Jesus says, now that isn't the kind of peace I'm talking about. So as you think about our champion wearing the belt of truth and wearing the breastplate of righteousness, in Isaiah 52, verses 7 through 10, he wears the shoes of peace. In the book of Isaiah, we meet two servants who are commissioned by God, and they are sent out by God with a message. You know the servants. If you go back to Isaiah chapter 6, Isaiah himself is one of the servants. He sees God high and lifted up. And immediately he starts realizing, I am not worthy even to look on this. Later in John, we find out that he's actually looking at Christ, seated on a throne, high and lifted up. And he's overwhelmed by this. And he says, I am a man of unclean lips. And immediately one of the seraphim comes and takes a coal from off the altar and cleanses Isaiah, touches his lips. Remember this? And then there's a question, who will go for us? And Isaiah says, I'll go. I want to go. What do you want me to do? And God says to him, I want you to announce something. I have a message I want you to announce. And when you start reading the message, it is one of judgment. I want you to go to all Israel, and I want you to preach to them until their ears don't hear and their eyes don't see. And I want you to preach until judgment comes and destroys this nation, except for a small remnant. Forty-four chapters later, you read about another servant who is commissioned by God. And he's sent by God. God says to him, go to the mountain of Israel and take your shoes and your feet and announce something to them. Publish good news. Isaiah went to these people and he had to publish the news of judgment. Here is another servant, and he's coming with a completely different message. And the message is, there is salvation, there is deliverance, there is peace. Why? Because your God reigns. 800 years later, a baby boy is born in the city of David, Bethlehem of Judea. And on the night of his birth, an angel announces, good news of great joy will be to all people.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the lead teaching pastor of Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Come join our worship service at 9:30 a.m. every Sunday, or connect with us online at pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is produced by Ryan Ahrens and CJ Billieu. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.